Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for today, Thursday, July 23rd, 2020. I'm your volunteer reader, Amy B. Hope you all are doing okay this morning. It's a warm day in Sioux City as far as I can tell. Let's take a look at the weather real quick and quickly and see what the official news is on the weather. As opposed to just what I think. Alrighty. According to the Sioux City Journal, it will be a high of 88 today, a low of 73. On Friday, a high of 92 and a low of 75. On Saturday, a high of 94, a low of 74. On Sunday, a high of 90 and a low of 64. And on Monday, looks like we're going to catch a break and it'll be going down again with a high of 82 and a low of 60. So we've got some warmth going for the next several days. Well, it's summertime in our area, so that's just kind of natural, isn't it? Okay, let's take a look at the mini editorial. This one is by Joe Dillinger of Sioux City. He writes, "What gives? First, the POTUS made fun of Joe Biden for wearing a face mask. Now he says it's patriotic. What gives? Poll numbers." And that was Joe Dillinger of Sioux City's opinion. Okay, our first story today is our first local story on the front page is entitled Traveler's Prayer, and it's by Earl Horlick. Flight 232 survivor shares emotional memories after more than 30 years. On a sweltering Tuesday afternoon, Yisrael Bronstein was overcome with emotion walking through a memorial set up to commemorate the legacy of United Airlines Flight 232, a Denver to Chicago flight that crash-landed outside of Sioux City in 1989. The 40-year-old Chicago-based clinical psychologist admitted his visit to the site was a last-minute decision conceived over the course of a few days. Bronstein needed to see the site for his own mental well-being. Plus, he wanted to return to the community that changed the course of his life forever. Of the 296 people on board of the ill-fated Flight 232, when it crashed 31 years ago, 112 passengers died, while 184 passengers survived. Only 9 years old at the time, Bronstein was one of the survivors. "People thought I had returned to Sioux City before now, and I let them assume that," he explained. "This is actually the first time I've been back in 31 years." Then, a fourth grader living in Chicago, Bronstein was traveling alone on Flight 232. The son of an Orthodox Jewish rabbi and a hippie mom, he was heading back home after visiting a friend in Denver when the DC-10 crashed in a farm field a few miles south of Sioux City. "Where are your parents? Why were you on that flight all alone?" Bronstein said with a shrug. "That's what people ask me after the fact. Instead, I thank God my mom and dad weren't with me because they wouldn't have survived. I would have lost my entire family." Instead, he befriended a fellow passenger named Richard Howard Sudlow. Bronstein asked Sudlow if he knew the words for John Renborn's folk song Traveler's Prayer. The businessman, who was seated next to Bronstein, said he did. During the flight, Sudlow mentioned a daughter who was a few years younger than Bronstein. "Mr. Sudlow was looking forward to seeing his daughter," Bronstein said, tearing up at the memory. "He couldn't wait to get home." It was then that Flight 232 began experiencing engine failure. "Even though the pilots and stewardesses were trying to calm our nerves," Bronstein said, "we knew the plane had to land and it was going to be rough." In the moments prior to the crash landing, Sudlow asked Bronstein to recite the Traveler's Prayer. And then he sacrificed his own life by shielding the 9-year-old from the brunt of the impact. Bronstein remembered being buried in the rubble of the plane, screaming and crying in agonizing pain. But he was alive, in large part due to the kindness of a complete stranger. Suffering from multiple injuries, Bronstein spent the next few months in a Sioux City hospital. This was where he and his family befriended the Omaha-based Rabbi M. Mendel Katzman, executive director from One Shabbat, an organization dedicated to Judaism. When my parents came to Sioux City, Rabbi Katzman literally served my dad kosher food from an RV parked in the hospital parking lot, Bronstein recalled, laughing. While Katzman attended to Bronstein's spiritual needs, doctors in Sioux City attended to his medical ones. The 9-year-old's injuries were so extensive, he was subsequently transferred to hospitals in both Denver and Chicago. I can't even remember how long I was in the hospital, he said. Isn't that crazy? While Bronstein's physical injuries healed, his sense of survivor guilt grew more toxic. Even a meeting with the daughter of Richard Sudlow, the man who saved his life, did nothing to lessen Bronstein's internal pain. I told her I killed her dad, but she wouldn't listen to me, Bronstein said. She wouldn't have any of it. She said, if confronted by a life or death predicament, I would have saved the life of another person. However, he spent many years in turmoil. Bronstein's relationship with his dad, whom he called charismatic but difficult, and his mom, who he called a mama lion who would do anything for her cubs, suffered as he struggled with opioid and then methadone addiction. Now sober, he currently works as a therapist and mentor to young people dealing with emotional issues. Yet Bronstein still suffers from depression, as well as the guilt that he associates with Flight 232. Those were the thoughts he felt when visiting the Flight 232 memorial, as well as the permanent Flight 232 exhibit at the Mid-American Museum of Aviation and Transportation. Before coming to Sioux City, Bronstein contacted Rabbi Katzman, who had remained a family friend for the past 3 decades. Rabbi has seen me in good times and bad times, Bronstein said. I wanted to share this experience with him. I tell you, Israel, that God never gives us more than we can handle, Katzman said. That's something we all need to remember. Coming back to Sioux City is one way that Bronstein is coming to terms with the past. He remembers the community with a fondness and admiration that provided him with relief. I'm so grateful for Siouxland and all of its citizens, Bronstein said. It's a wonderful place. It has been 31 years since plane crash forever changed Bronstein's life. He experienced physical hardships that, for the most part, have healed. But what about the emotional hardships? There were tears in Bronstein's eyes at the Flight 232 memorial. Maybe he's struggling to understand the past. Or maybe Bronstein is finally ready to heal himself. Boy, you guys, that one made me cry. Huh. Good journalism, huh? Well written. Okay, going back to the front page, if I can. Mr. Computer slowed down real quick, so it's spinning at the moment. Let's see if it comes back to me. Oh, my goodness. There we go. Woo! Okie doke. So now we're going to move on, and this is a national article, but I'm going to read it because it's directly relates to 3 of our casinos. Almost half of Iowa casinos requiring face masks. 3 of Siouxland's 4 casinos require face coverings. Nearly half of Iowa's 23 casinos are requiring guests to wear face masks while inside the casino. According to an analysis of the casino's coronavirus-related policies posted on their websites, 10 casinos are now requiring all guests wear face masks inside the casinos. Some of the requirements say the mask mandate is in effect whenever guests are within 6 feet of one another. Another 13 casinos are not requiring face masks, but say they are encouraging or recommending guests wear them. Some casinos are providing masks to guests who do not arrive with one. Public health and infectious disease experts, as well as some early studies, say wearing face masks helps prevent the spread of the new coronavirus and COVID-19, the disease the virus causes. As of Wednesday afternoon, nearly 40,000 Iowans had contracted the coronavirus at some point during the global pandemic, and 808 Iowans had died. Okay, turning to the local and state news, I'm going to read the graphic that we have in the paper about Siouxland COVID-19 cases by county, starting with the South Dakota counties in our area. Yankton County has 91 cases with 2 deaths. Clay County, 100 cases. Union County, South Dakota, 2 cases. Then we'll go to the Nebraska counties in our area. Cedar County, Nebraska, 20 cases. Dixon County, Nebraska, 58 cases. Wayne County, Nebraska, 36 cases. Thurston County, Nebraska, 188 cases. Dakota County, Nebraska, 1,848 cases with 41 deaths. In our area of the Siouxland in Iowa, Lyon County has 84 cases, Osceola County, 72 cases, Dickinson County, 350 cases with 3 deaths. Sioux County has 541 cases, O'Brien County, 109 cases with 1 death, Clay County, Iowa, 161 cases with 1 death, Plymouth County, Iowa, 391 cases with 6 deaths. Cherokee County, Iowa, 92 cases with 1 death. Buena Vista County, Iowa, 1,760 cases with 12 deaths. Woodbury County, Iowa, 3,494 cases with 47 deaths. Ida County, 26 cases. Sac County, 75 cases. Crawford County, 688 cases with 3 deaths. Monona County has 82 positive cases of COVID-19. All right, and then Nick Heitrich writes today's COVID-19 article, 1 new death reported in Woodbury County. Woodbury County recorded an additional death attributed to the novel coronavirus Wednesday. The Siouxland District Health Department reported that a male age 41 to 60 died of COVID-19, increasing the respiratory illnesses death toll in the county to 47. It was the first death recorded in Woodbury County in 6 days. The health department reported 11 new positive cases Wednesday out of 121 new cases performed. Woodbury County has had 3,494 confirmed cases, according to Iowa Department of Public Health data. Siouxland District Health reported that 3,154 of those cases have recovered. Most counties in the region continue to see the number of new cases remaining at steady or decreasing. One exception is Iowa's Lyon County, which saw a new high in the total number of active cases on Wednesday, with 28, according to state data. On July 7th, only 7 active cases were reported in the county. That total has steadily increased since then, boosted by 9 new cases reported on July 11th, a record for single-day cases in the county. Lyon County reported 4 new cases on Wednesday and 3 on Tuesday. The county has had 84 total confirmed cases of COVID-19 and 806 negative cases for the virus. The county's positive rate is 9.4% of those tested. In Regional Medical Coordination Center 3, which includes several Northwest Iowa counties, 34 patients were hospitalized on Wednesday with COVID-19. 11 patients in RMCC 3 were in intensive care units and 4 were on ventilators. So here's the totals. South Dakota total cases, 8,077. Nebraska total cases, 23,486. And Iowa total cases, 40,085. Okay, and then here's a non-COVID-19 article by Nick Heitrick. Sioux City arson suspect charged with setting more fires. Good gracious. Within a day of bonding out of jail, a Sioux City man already facing arson charges was arrested and charged with setting a series of grass fires along Interstate 29. Sioux City police arrested Howard Waned on Wednesday on 4 counts of third-degree arson and 1 count of ongoing criminal conduct. A passerby reported one of the fires along I-29 between the Floyd River and Ravine Park Drive at 1 p.m., and officers discovered more fires when responding to the call. Waned was located walking from a fire near Ravine Park Drive and South Lewis Boulevard and arrested. Waned, 45, posted $15,000 bond on Tuesday and was released from the Woodbury County Jail, where he was being held on charges of second-degree arson, first-degree criminal mischief, and 2 counts of third-degree arson. Waned was arrested Sunday afternoon after witnesses saw him placing a wooden pallet against a storage shed door at Pulaski Park and trying to ignite paper under the pallet. Damage to the building was minor, court documents said. Waned also is accused of setting fire to the contents of a garbage can at that park, 2400 Vine Avenue. Waned also is charged with setting a July 12th fire at a house under construction in the 4600 block of Peters Avenue. According to court documents, Waned placed wood from the construction site, put it into a trash can that contained paper and other construction material, then moved it next to an overhead garage door and set it on fire. The fire destroyed the overhead door and damaged siding on the garage and house, and a 2017 Buick LaCrosse parked inside the garage. The damage was estimated at more than $10,000. My goodness. Changing my page here. We're going to go to some briefs. It is just some more little sad stories, mostly. Authorities ID man killed in grain bin. Lamars, Iowa. Plymouth County authorities have identified a man killed in a grain bin accident on Tuesday morning. Daniel Cronin, 65, died after being pulled into corn inside a bin approximately 5 miles east of Lamars, according to the Plymouth County Sheriff's Office. Authorities were summoned to the scene at 9:50 a.m. Upon arrival, deputies learned that Cronin had been inside the grain bin loosening stuck corn. He had safety measures in place, but was still pulled into the corn when the crust broke. Rescue operations were unsuccessful, and Cronin's body was recovered at 10:50 a.m. Boy, grain bins can be dangerous, huh? The next brief is construction worker killed in crash. Boyden, Iowa. A Northwest Iowa man was killed while working in a construction zone in Sioux County when a driver struck the state employee. The fatality was reported by the Sioux City Sheriff's Office, which said the incident occurred at 9 a.m. on Tuesday. The release said that Lynn Roeder, an Iowa Department of Transportation employee, was standing in the westbound lane of U.S. Highway 18, about 1 mile west of Boyden, with a traffic sign telling westbound traffic to stop or slow ahead of a construction area. William Plantage, age 94, of Sheldon, Iowa, was driving a Chevrolet westbound on Highway 18 and struck Roeder, age 64, of Ashton, on the road. Roeder was transported by Boyden ambulance to Sanford Sheldon Medical Center, where he was pronounced dead as a result of injuries, the release said. Well, here's a happier little article. All right, I don't know whether it's happy or not, but at least it's not a crime. Aldi pushes Sioux City store opening to early 2021. Sioux City grocery chain Aldi is now planning to open its first Sioux City location early next year rather than at the end of this year. The store is expected to land at the corner of Floyd Boulevard and Outer Drive. Early phases of a construction began this summer. We can confirm the opening date for our first Sioux City store is now early 2021. We will reach out closer to the grand opening with more specific details as soon as we are able and look forward to serving the Sioux City community, Matt Lila, Faribault Division Vice President for Aldi, wrote in a statement to the Journal this month. I guess we're going to go to the opinion page. There's two local letters to the editor. And the first one is by Sandra Eggdorf of Hinton. As an American, I have concerns about the violence occurring within several cities in the U.S. The local governments are demanding that the federal government stop sending federal law enforcement to their cities. I feel that if they insist on this, then the federal government should comply and tell all federal employees to close offices and go home. We pull out of embassies in foreign cities due to possible violence and political issues, so I feel that we, the people of the U.S., should treat these self-protecting cities the same way. The federal government should then fine or bill those cities for the forced layoffs of federal employees. If Portland wants the federal government gone, we should honor its wishes. And again, that letter was by Sandra Eggdorf of Hinton. The next letter to the Sioux City Journal is by Keith Pease of Sioux City. He writes, an award-winning superintendent of schools with a compensation package of nearly $300,000 should be able to investigate and solve problems within the district, such as the ones recently covered at West Middle School. Taxpayers shouldn't have to pay for outside consultation and $250,000 salary to our top teacher. All but one of our school board members swung and missed this time. That was by Keith Pease of Sioux City. I'm going to go ahead and read the quote of today in today's Bible verse to get us to the halfway mark. The first quote is by Ernest Hemingway. He lived 1899 to 1961, and was, of course, an American novelist. He wrote, I like to listen. I have learned a great deal from listening carefully. Most people never listen. That's true, isn't it? Okay, today's Bible verse is from Hebrews chapter 13, verses 5 and 6. Keep your lives free from the love of money and be content with what you have, because God has said, never will I leave you, never will I forsake you. So we say with confidence, the Lord is my helper. I will not be afraid. What can mere mortals do to me? Find a couple more little short things to read to get us to the halfway mark. But see what we can do. So the journal always has this little section called Frequently Asked Questions. And the question it writes is, what kind of rubber bands do you use on your papers? And the journal answers, that's an interesting question. Circulation officials tell us they're made by the Beacon line and they come in a variety of colors. If you're keen on getting some, I'm sure they'd be able to give you more details. Otherwise, save the ones you get with each paper. And then there's always a little online poll. Yesterday's poll was, how often do you plan to watch Major League Baseball games this season? And the responses, they got 43 votes. 11% said they watch Major League Baseball games more than once a week. 0% said about once a week. 7% said once or twice a week. 14% they watch Major League Baseball games every now and then. And 68% of the people who answered the poll said they don't watch Major League Baseball games at all. That's interesting. Today's poll question is, have you visited a casino since they reopened? That's something to think about. And if you have an answer for the journal, you can contact them at SiouxCityJournal.com. Okay, everybody, we've just about reached the halfway point. So here's our thing we say at the half point. You are listening to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Thursday, July 23rd, 2020, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. The first obituary is Rochelle F. Hamilton from Marquette, Kansas, formerly of Sioux City. Rochelle Faye Lefkovich Hamilton, age 78, of Marquette, Kansas, formerly of Sioux City, passed away on July 8, 2020 at her home. A celebration of life will be 1 p.m. on August 8 at 106 North Washington Street in Marquette. Social distancing, masks, and precautions will be required. Cards and well wishes may be sent to 106 North Washington Street, Marquette, Kansas, 67464. Mrs. Hamilton was born in Sioux City to Abe and Rebecca Lefkovich. Upon graduation from Central High School in Sioux City, she received her advanced education at Kansas City Art Institute, where she met her future husband, Philip Hamilton. They moved to Marquette in 2005, where Mrs. Hamilton was a jewelry designer and her husband has a photography studio. They were married for 57 years. From Sioux City, Regina Ray Klein, age 78, died Wednesday, July 15, 2020. Service, July 25, 9 a.m., Calvary Lutheran Church. Burial, Memorial Park Cemetery. Visitation, July 24th, 4 to 7 p.m. at the church, Meyer Brothers Morningside Chapel. From Sioux City, Albert Ray Albright, age 85, died Tuesday, July 1st, 2020. Waterbury Funeral Service of Sioux City. From Remsen, Iowa, Francis Guttner, age 97, died Tuesday, July 21st, 2020. Graveside service, July 23rd, 1 p.m., St. Mary's Cemetery, Remsen. Fish Funeral Home and Monument, Remsen. From Lamars, Iowa, Dan Cronin, age 65, died Tuesday, July 21st, 2020. Private Family Service, July 25th, St. Catherine's Catholic Church, Oyens, Iowa. Burial, St. Catherine's Catholic Cemetery. Visitation, July 24th, 3 to 7 p.m., Rex Winkle Funeral Home in Lamars. From Aurelia, Iowa, Donna Lou Anderson, age 92, died Tuesday, July 21st, 2020. Graveside service, July 25th, 10:30 a.m., Pleasant Hill Cemetery, Aurelia, Greenwood Schubert Funeral Home, Cherokee, Iowa. From Sioux City, Darlene M. Moss. Darlene May Moss, a.k.a. Grammy Dar, a.k.a. Spot, 71 years young of Sioux City, died Monday, July 20th, 2020, at a Sioux City hospital after a brief and courageous battle with cancer. A public memorial service will be 10:30 a.m. Friday at Morningside Lutheran Church, led by Reverend Tom Lowen. A private, family-only graveside service will be held following the memorial service. Arrangements are under the direction of Meyer Brothers Morningside Chapel. Condolences may be sent online to www.meyerbroschapels.com. Darlene was born on December 23, 1948, in Cherokee, Iowa, to Clifford and Lenora Johnson Bingston. She was baptized and confirmed at Bethlehem Lutheran Church in Cherokee. She graduated from Aurelia High School in 1967. Darlene married Frank James Moss on May 3, 1969, at Bethlehem Lutheran Church in Cherokee. Together, Frank and Darlene raised three children, Todd, Craig, and Kelly. In 1985, Darlene began working as a teacher's aide at Riverside School in Sioux City. This is where her passion for teaching and helping others began. She registered for classes at both Western Iowa Tech Community College and Morningside College in 1990. She continued her coursework as a non-traditional student, graduating summa cum laude with a bachelor's degree in education in 1994. She then obtained her master's degree in 1996. Her 20-year teaching career began with positions at Smith, Leeds, Hunt, and Washington Elementary Schools. She then moved to East Middle School, where she taught sixth graders for 15 years, retiring in 2015. Darlene enjoyed spending time with her husband, children, grandchildren, friends, family, and church. Darlene would bring a hearty laugh, good cheer, and great conversation to any event or occasion. Later in life, she enjoyed traveling as far as her ancestral home in Sweden and Frank's family roots in England. Forever the teacher, motivator, and cheerleader, Darlene made everyone around her better with her can-do attitude and positivity. She was an active member of Morningside Lutheran Church for nearly 50 years and taught Sunday school. Most recently, she became very involved with the Asian Women's Ministry Group, where she created many special bonds and was referred to as Darling. In lieu of flowers, a memorial fund is being established to provide school supplies for students at East Middle School. Donations may be submitted to the Moss family. We would like to thank our friends and family for their prayers and overwhelming displays of love and support. For that, we are forever grateful. Turning now to sports, you guys. And of course, the big article today is that Major League Baseball starts its season nearly 4 months late, but we're not going to read that one because that's a national article. But I know a lot of local people are happy to watch their Major League Baseball. Our first local sports article is by Zach James of the Journal, and it's entitled The Warrior Way. Sergeant Bluff Luton High School senior Josh Stengel was nervous standing on third base, but he was ready to do what baseball coach Matt Nelson instructed. Stengel was about to steal home in the third inning of a 6-1 Class 3A sub-state win over MOC Floyd Valley. The Warriors weren't afraid to use their speed on Wednesday night. With the win, the Warriors are going to their third state tournament this academic year. SBL also qualified for the state semifinals in football, then received runner-up honors at the Class 3A basketball tournament. Nelson noticed that Dutchman pitcher Colton Culver had a dip in his right shoulder when pitching in the stretch. Nelson also knew that if Corver attempted to get out of it, it'd be a balk. Stengel needed a pitch to see it, but once he saw it a couple pitches later, he took off for home. "I just wanted to get a good lead," he said. "I just took off. I started looking out for it, and then I picked up on it." Stengel slid headfirst into home, and he got under the Dalton Jacobsma's glove. The ball was sitting on the ground. The umpires also called a balk on the play, allowing Sean Owens to move from first base to second. Stengel joked that since the Warriors didn't get to have a track season because of COVID-19, his base running served as a track workout. Stengel, the son of former University of South Dakota track and field runner Jim Stengel, served as a courtesy runner for pitcher Daniel Wright. "It was very exciting to see the ball on the ground and that they called a balk," Stengel said. "I gave everyone a hug coming back to the dugout. It was awesome." Nelson wasn't afraid to push the dice on the bases on Wednesday, especially with Stengel. "Stengel is the fastest guy in our team," Nelson said. "We're so blessed to have him back this summer after last year being at the ear guard. He's a complete weapon on the bases, and he was able to come through for us." That wasn't the only time that the Warriors were aggressive on the bases. In the fourth inning, Ben Freiberg was at first base, and he was looking to get a stolen base. The throw from second base was an errant throw that was later kicked into shallow left field. Freiberg made it to second, but he wanted more. He sprinted to third base, and Nelson told him to keep on going from home. Freiberg ended up scoring from first base. "We were going to fake bunt, and I saw the ball was in the dirt, so I just took off," Freiberg said. "I just kept going. Nelson sent me home, and I was like, 'Are you serious?'" It worked out in the end. Of course, the Warriors used their bats in the win, too. In that third inning, Spencer Clean and Sean Owens had RBI singles. In the fifth inning, Wade Fair had an RBI groundout. Those six runs were just what Wright needed on the mound in terms of run support. Wright allowed one run on seven hits. He struck out seven batters and walked one. Wright struck out the side in the seventh inning, and that earned him a dog pile from his teammates on the mound. Wright enjoyed that dog pile, something he's been dreaming of since he started playing baseball. MOCFV was hitting the ball hard, and they're a great hitting team, Wright said. "They're much better than I anticipated, honestly. Our guys made plays. I tried to hit my spots the best I could, and it was a gritty effort for everyone. I was mostly trying to hit my spots and get soft outs." The Dutchmen got their lone run in the fourth inning on a Kyle Christie RBI single. Corver took the loss as he allowed six runs, two earned, on seven hits in five innings. He walked two and struck out four. Adam DeBoer pitched a clean sixth inning. Dutchman coach Brian Weedy, that's spelled W-E-D-E, enjoyed coaching MOC Floyd Valley this summer. "I'm just proud in the way they competed," Weed said. "Baseball is a stupid game sometimes, and there were times tonight where you wonder, why do we get punished? Our guys competed really well and got the barrel on the ball. They made all the plays they needed to make." And there's a great picture of Dutchman number 12 running to the base, and the first baseman doing a good catch. That's Sergeant Bluff Luton's Sean Owens catching the ball to get MOC Floyd Valley's Dylan Brands out at first base in a Class 3A sub-state championship with MOC Floyd Valley on Wednesday from Sergeant Bluff. Okie doke, going back to the front page of the sports section. This one is the Siouxland Athlete of the Week. It's Kingsley Pearson's Matt Christofferson, who is batting .433 for the state-bound Panthers. And the article is entitled, Cookie is KP's Rock at Short. Christofferson embraces defensive and RP roles. This article is by Justin Rust. Even from the start of his high school baseball career, nothing has been typical for Kingsley Pearson's Matthew Christofferson. First, he earned a spot on the Panthers' varsity roster as an eighth grader, and it didn't take long for him to take on a new name with the team. Christofferson wore glasses as an eighth grader, and one of the KP coaches thought he looked like former MLB second baseman Cookie Rojas, so he started calling Christofferson Cookie. Christofferson liked the nickname and it stuck. I don't think anyone calls me by my real name. I don't care, I like it, said Christofferson, this week's Siouxland Athlete of the Week. I didn't know who he was, so I had to look him up. There's another name on the team named Matt Riordan. I enjoy the nickname. Cookie is also the rare baseball player who enjoys the defensive aspect of the game the most and would rather be the closing pitcher than the starter. And while he enjoys playing defense more, Cookie has batted above 300 in all 5 years of varsity baseball. Cookie has played a major role in why the Panthers are making their first trip to the Class 1A state tournament since 2002. He's going to be really missed, KP coach Taylor Doshot said. He's been a 5-year starter in this program, and the kids around him just absolutely love him on and off the field. He's a great kid. He leads by example, he works hard, and holds guys accountable. Christofferson's defensive career started off on the same path as Rojas, as a second baseman. He wouldn't end his high school career at second, though. Before Christofferson's junior season, Doshot asked Cookie to move over to shortstop, a move he quickly embraced. To Cookie, fielding is more fun than hitting because there's more consistency to it. Reading ground balls is easier than figuring out a pitcher's tendencies. Christofferson was a little nervous for the move, but his love of defense helped make it an easy transition. I was a little nervous about making the longer throws, but I adapted to it well. I love defense, and I wasn't too worked up about it, and it's worked out well, said Christofferson, who will attend Arizona State. Defense is always consistent. Hitting, you see different pitchers. Ground balls are always the same, and you make good reads, and I love it. Some nights you can't hit, but your defense can always be there. I had been on the team quite a while, and I wanted to be a leader, and you always look at the shortstop as a leader. Doshat said Christofferson dedicated himself to becoming a shortstop. Defensively, he's a rock at shortstop, Doshat said. He's worked on footwork and arm strength and worked on the little things. If you ask him, defense is his first love. I knew he was a ball player and knew he could field the ball. He had to grow a little bit and get stronger to handle short, and he did. For the last 3 seasons, Cookie has been one of Doshot's go-to pitchers, but not to start games. Christofferson has thrown in 39 games over the past 3 seasons, but only 3 of those have been starts, according to Varsity Bound. Doshot turns to Christofferson as his relief pitcher in pressure situations, a role Cookie enjoys being in. He threw 36 and a third innings as a sophomore, with 32 strikeouts and a 3.47 ERA. The next season, Christofferson threw 22 and two-thirds innings in 15 games with 17 strikeouts and a 0.93 ERA. In a tight game, when we need 4 to 5 outs, we're going to go to him, and he likes that role, Doshot said. He's done it for us for a few years. He has a great command. great off-speed pitching and is a dependable closer for us. He is comfortable in that role. Doshut gave Christofferson the ball in the final two innings of Tuesday's sub-state game against Logan Magnolia, with the Panthers holding a four-run lead. Christofferson gave up one hit and an unearned to close out the game for the Panthers to help get them to the state tournament. Christofferson didn't allow a hit in the 1 1/3 innings against Hinton in the district final. I love it, to be honest. I would much rather come in and finish it off than be the starter, Christofferson said. It's a blast to pitch the last two innings and have the pressure on. I really like the pressure. Playing on the team for so many years, I've gotten used to it. I've been in a couple of big games, and I'm used to it. Hitting may not be Cookie's first love on the diamond, but he's quite successful at it. As an eighth grader, Christofferson batted .348 with 17 RBIs. The next season, he batted .309 with 21 runs scored. He added 28 runs scored as a sophomore with a .343 average, and as a junior, he batted .351 with 36 runs scored and 25 RBIs. Cookie is having the best season of his career in terms of batting average during his final season. He's third on the team with a .433 average, and he scored 24 runs as the Panthers' number two hitter. He uses the whole field, sprays it around. He's a little unorthodox, and he's a guy that can slap it around. Plus, he helps with blunt hits, Doshut said. He really takes that seriously and works on that in practice. With his speed and bunting ability, he's been a great two-hole hitter, and I really value that spot. Christofferson can still add some points to his average at the 1A state tournament. But for Cookie, he's out there having fun. He's enjoyed the last 5 years, and especially the last couple of seasons with his brother Malachi, who is a sophomore for the Panthers. Cookie is going to go into the state tournament with the same attitude he's had throughout his career. I try and stay cool when I'm playing and not show too much emotion unless it's a big game. I do try and get us excited when we need to be. I try and bet that guy, and I hope I am. I must be B instead of bet. Christofferson said, even just with the other teammates, it's a blast out there, and we're always having fun. It's been a blessing to have my brother on the team, and I'm glad to be on some great teams. Sounds like a nice young man, everybody, huh? Okay, let's see what else we can do here for sports. Well, here's our goal, our holes in one, which is something we can only do on Thursday, so that's exciting. The following golfers have made a hole in one this season, as reported to the Sioux City Journal. The holes in run only run in Thursday's editions. The first was Scott Knowles. That's K-N-O-W-L-E-S. Knowles' hole-in-one happened on Tuesday, July 21st, at Green Valley Golf Course. It was his 10th career hole-in-one. Knowles got the ace on hole number 5, which is 165 yards. He used a 5-iron. The witness was Terry Anderson. Tracy Badar, that's spelled B-A-D-A-R. Badar's hole-in-one happened on Monday, July 20th at Deer Run in Hinton. Badar got the ace on hole number 3, which is 140 yards. He used a 9-iron. The witness was Heather Badar. Corey Conway. Conway's hole-in-one happened on Sunday, July 19th at Two Rivers Golf Course. Conway got the ace on hole number 15, which is 145 yards. He used a pitching wedge. The witness was Colin Eberhardt. Mark Schoenselder. Schoenselder's hole-in-one happened on Friday, July 17th at Floyd Park Golf Course. Schoenselder got the ace on hole number 1, which is 131 yards. He used a pitching edge. Krista Rodman was the witness. Joel Longton. Longton's hole-in-one happened on Wednesday, July 15th at Sioux City Country Club. Longton got the ace on hole number 6, which is 147 yards. He used an 8 iron. The witnesses were Noel Avery, Butch Hoag, and John Persinger. Let's see what else we have that's local. Let's see here. Most everything, it looks to me, is international and national. So that might just have kind of done it for us, you guys. I'm going to read today's birthdays purely to kind of get us to our right time. So today's birthdays, Emil Jennings, 1884 to 1950, was an actor. Raymond Chandler, the author, lived 1888 to 1959. Anthony M. Kennedy, who's on the Supreme Court, was born in 1936 on this date, and he's still alive. Woody Harrelson was born in 1961 on today, July 23rd, and he's still living. Eric LaSalle is also an actor. He was born on 1962. Slash, the guitarist. Oh, I'm trying to remember what band Slash is with. I can't remember. Is it Kiss? I could be wrong. I apologize to all of you out there who are Slash fans. He was born on today's date in 1965. Philip Seymour Hoffman, who was a very great actor, was born on this date in 1967 and passed away in 2014. Alison Krauss, oh my goodness, she's one of my very favorite singers. She was born on this date in 1971. She's a singer-songwriter. Marlon Wayans, one of the many, many Wayanses, very talented family, was born in 1972. He's an actor and he's still living. Michelle Williams was born in 1979. She's an actress and a singer. And Daniel Radcliffe, Harry Potter, his own self, was born on this day in 1989. And he is an actor. Let's just check our weather again, just to kind of finish us off here. All we really need to say about weather is that it's going to be hot. But today, our high should be 88 with a low of 73. Looks like it's going to be windy. Winds out of the south-southeast for 10 to 20 miles per hour. Tomorrow, high of 92, low of 75 here in Sioux City. The wind is 10 to 20 miles per hour. Saturday in Sioux City, a high of 94 and a low of 74. Mostly sunny and increasingly windy. Sunday here in Sioux City, a high of 90 and a low of 64. And then on Monday, we start going a little cooler again with possibly a shower or a thunderstorm next Monday with a high of 82 and a low of 60. Well, everybody, that does it for today's reading of the Sioux City Journal for Thursday, July 3rd, 2020. I'm your volunteer reader, Amy B., and I think you heard my dog Dibs in the background panting. I think we did a little too much chasing the ball this morning. He's been panting and panting, so I hope you haven't been listening to him pant and drool. You can access a recording of today's reading of the journal on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thanks for listening, and have a really wonderful rest of your day.
From the Bureau of Economic Geology, this is Earth Date. Sometimes we have too much electricity, but more often, grid operators are carefully managing its production to be sure that we have enough. So, a lot of work has gone into trying to store excess electricity to use later when we need it. The obvious solution, giant batteries, is still too expensive for most applications and has environmental implications. This has led scientists to look for other ways. One method uses surplus power to compress air and pump it into old salt mines. The salt tends to seal cracks in the walls, making the mines airtight. When needed, the compressed air can be released to turn a turbine, or it can be used as the intake air for a natural gas power plant, making the plant more productive. Another way to store excess energy is to pump water uphill into existing reservoirs and then release it through hydroelectric dams when power is needed. This method was pioneered 100 years ago in Italy and Switzerland and is used today around the world and in many U.S. states, like Michigan. On the Chilean coast, they're even experimenting with using solar energy to pump seawater up a cliff where it could flow down to make power at night. These solutions don't make economic sense unless the electricity is very cheap and the reservoir was already built for another purpose. But when those two things are present, pumping air and water to store energy plays a valuable role in balancing the grid to meet our ever-changing power demands. For Earth Date, I'm Scott Tinker.
Earth Date is produced by the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas at Austin, with support from Schlumberger, helping oil and gas companies increase production and efficiency while lowering environmental impact. You can hear more Earth Date stories at earthdate.org.